Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm very happy to be speaking with my old friend Marcy Reed today. Marcy is the executive director of the Architects Foundation at the American Institute of Architects, or the AIA Foundation. Did I completely flub that up, Marcy?
Nope, that's perfect. Perfect.
So you have a really interesting set of topics that I think we, you know, been looking forward to talking about today. And the weird part is I'm not really sure how to introduce them. It's sort of this weird, you know, space that has something to do with diversity, inclusion. It has something to do with architecture. It has something to do with nonprofit management. How do we get started on this topic?
Wow, it's always neat to be introduced as somebody that's doing something really weird.
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. And I really love the fact that we have stayed connected through LinkedIn and have kind of evolved to be able to have this conversation today, which is stuff that I'm really excited and passionate about. And yeah, so we're the AIA Foundation. We are the second philanthropic partner of the American Institute of Architects, which is a 501c6 professional association founded in 1857. We have been around since 2006 officially. And it's really interesting and not something that people think about often, which is a C3 charitable organization that sits alongside a C6 professional association. And there are a lot of them out there. As a matter of fact, you know, there's an association for everything, and there's even one for us called the Association Foundation Group. And what that means ultimately is, you know, we're a C6 that has to have a mission in service to society as a whole to be a public charity. But because our largest donor is the C6, you know, we're somewhat beholden for that mission to lift up the members of that professional association as well, so that they can do their day-to-day jobs in better service to society. So that's kind of then where our mission as the Architects Foundation is to attract, inspire, and invest in the next generation to have a positive impact in the world. And we are specifically focusing on empowering a diverse next generation of architects because, right, you know, and we can get into a little further kind of why architects are kind of at the fulcrum of this effort.
Sure. You said something in your notes to me, which I think is a very good place to, you know, sort of like the big picture statement, which is architecture is a profession held in high regard, although it's mysterious to people who aren't exposed to it either as a possible career or as a client. And I think that's absolutely true. Is that something that also stands in the way of recruiting people into the field?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I jokingly tell people, you know, remember Seinfeld, you know, George Costanza would say he was really Art Vandelay, an architect, and people would just gravitate towards him. It's like, ooh, you know, we know you do. You know, people walk into a space that's wonderfully designed and it has an impact on your emotions and your energy level and your performance and your productivity, but you don't really know why. And it's true, day to day, a lot of us, just to have the shelter we need as human beings in our home, oftentimes an architect has not been involved in building the home you live in. You know they were involved in the office you work in, but it's just the owner of that building who may be working with architects. So it's a bit elusive. And that's a challenge. And a lot of the local chapters of the AIA work really hard at getting architects into schools, talking to kids about it. The federal government actually recently accepted architecture as part of the STEM fields.
Oh.
So for certain educational institutions to be eligible for federal funds, architecture education now can be a part of those receiving those resources to advance the education and outreach for the profession. So that's a good move.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, I'm a little taken aback. I'm like, why wasn't that already a STEM field?
Well, yeah. And often the architecture programs in colleges sit within the engineering programs as well. So yeah, you're right. But then I don't want to offend anyone for whom the A can also mean the arts.
Right.
So Steam is a big tent.
Right. Well, I mean, again, to hit on another point that you sent to me, you know, architecture, my limited knowledge of what architecture is, it is, again, this weird, and Marcy, when I say weird, I do mean fascinating. this weird intersection of, you know, it is art. It is where art meets engineering, meets mm-hmm. material sciences, it meets physics. Everything sort of meets in that one little space that has everything to do with how people live and play. And so, as you've said, you know, clearly architects are natural problem solvers, but mm-hmm. but that can lend itself to social impact solutions as well. Can we talk some more about that?
Sure. And if we want to take a step back kind of to the origin of our diversity scholarships, Whitney Young, who was the president of the Urban League, and we've seen him on the news recently with the unfortunate passing of John Lewis and C.T. Vivian, and Whitney Young was among the civil rights icons working alongside these wonderful people. In 1968, he approached the American Institute of Architects at their national convention. He was the keynote speaker, and maybe we can send a link out with this podcast so people can read more, but you know, he basically admonished the profession, because you say that you're problem solvers for society, you say that you create community, and yet right now in our major cities, you're building tenements to separate the least from the rest.
Right.
And so, you know, he challenged the profession to create a scholarship to help minority and disadvantaged students become architects. And that was started in 1970. And I have to say the needle has not moved much in getting minorities into the profession. And the reason this is important is as our societies become more diverse and complex, and the integrated design processes are the best design processes, having more people around the table from the beginning of problem solving, you need to have people around the table that reflect the community where this project is going to be built. And it can be a single building, it can be a master plan, but we all, in so many of the ways we're all talking about and learning about and reckoning with diversity in society and equity in society, you know, this is one really interesting lens to look at it through, which is the design thinking and problem solving that is part of the architectural profession.
Right. So what are the barriers? Why are we having a hard time doing that kind of diversity recruiting into the field? And is it the cost of the education? Is it simply that, you know, people of color are simply not interested in the discipline, or what do you think?
I think it's a lot of things. It's being exposed to the profession and being, you know, understanding it as a possible career path. I mean, the architecture profession as a whole, this is interesting. We had a conversation with the AIA board and the executive committee of the National Organization of Minority Architects this week. And, you know, there's this superiority and kind of exclusivity that's a part of the rigor of architectural education in general. And when you have a student coming from a minority background that may be challenged economically and culturally, as well as, you know, having limited exposure to the profession, and then you jump into a program that by its nature is look to your right, look to your left, by the end of the year, two of you aren't going to be here. It's like, what is that about? And it's inherent in a lot of architecture programs, unfortunately. Student loan debt for architecture students is 25% higher than the national average student loan debt. It is an expensive education. And you know, all of these things are a barrier in general to the architectural education, but when you layer on top of it someone who doesn't look like a lot of the other people in the studio in some of the architecture programs, many of them, and then just even if we get more Black architecture students in particular into architecture programs, they're not graduating at the same rates as some of their peers. So it's really complicated, and in the time we have, we can't really drill down into it, but it's an exclusive profession to begin with, and the education, the exclusivity you seek out in the workplace begins with the culture of the education and the architecture studio. When you layer on top of that a student who's already facing tremendous pressure to be be in college anyway, and it's just not a recipe for the success we want to see. So we're working really hard that in addition to the financial resources we're giving to some of our minority students, trying to find ways to connect them with mentors in the AIA chapters in the communities where they're going to school so they don't feel alone. So right. there's a lot of work to do, and we're also trying to build an alumni network among, we've been giving away our diversity scholarships since 1970. We haven't kept up as we should with the recipients of that those resources, and we're trying to bring who we can back into the fold to be mentors for the upcoming generation.
So it is a multifaceted approach. It's not just recruitment. No. It's retention. It's mentorship. It's building an alumni network. It's keeping people connected. Yeah.
And even internships, we're piloting something with HKS Architects right now on matching our diversity students with firms that have really done a lot of work to create a culture of inclusivity, to kind of show them there's a sense of belonging that we can build to keep you in the profession and you know, help you find a place to work and be productive as an architect.
Right. And now would seem to be the time. I mean, the conversation is very keenly on everybody's minds these days, I think.
Yes. The challenge is, however, with COVID, the testing centers have been closed even for people pursuing their licenses to move from, you know, being a graduate into being a professional. And it's a little bit ominously reflective of the 2008 economic downturn. So we lost a generation of architects then who couldn't find jobs and were a little bit worried about how COVID is stalling education in general, but it's also stalling people who are out of school wanting to become licensed as architects because the testing center are closed right now. So there's a lot of challenge, but hopefully a lot of opportunity.
Right. Marcy, this is fascinating stuff, and I wish we had time to do the deep dig on any one of these things, but we've only got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
And I wanted to selfishly ask you about the Octagon.
Oh, wow. That. Our headquarters in Washington, D.C. is the Octagon, and there's another great link we can send to folks with the podcast. It's the oldest private residence in the actual original district proper of Washington, D.C., although there are neighbors like Alexandria and Georgetown that are older. This was a home built between 1790 and 1801, the Talo family of Virginia, that eventually became the first headquarters for the American Institute of Architects in the nation's capital. So we own the building now, the Architects Foundation. And when I said our mission was to attract, inspire, and invest in the next generation, we are positioning the Octagon to be a place of inspiration where we can have provocative conversations and exhibits and things when we can come together again, that is.
Yeah.
And we're trying to really hone in now. We've always been commended, or in recent past, we've been commended for how we interpret the museum as a place and speak to everyone who lived there, including the enslaved people who operated the building for the Talo family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an opportunity these days to grow that and deepen that and be more honest and shed more light on the conversation, you know, the Talo's wealth having been built on the backs of enslaved people.
Right.
And also the fact this is a tremendous demonstration of important architecture, and again, an inspirational place where we can have conversations to move all of this work forward. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to DC and getting back into the building and showcasing it as a welcoming place for many voices in these conversations.
Yeah, that post-COVID list just keeps getting longer and longer.
I know.
Well, and I wanted to call out to our listeners this Star Tribune article you sent about three black architects on how race has shaped our environment in Twin Cities. I think that's an excellent illustration of exactly what we've been talking about in this episode today. And I'm going to try to remember that link in my show notes.
Great.
Marcy, is there any parting words of advice or wisdom to people who are interested in learning more about you or the work that you do? And if someone wanted to contact you, how would they best go about doing that?
Sure. So architectsfoundation.org is our website. And there's a way to reach any one of my mighty staff of three, including myself, that do all of this work. We have a fantastic board of directors that are also listed on the website that help us do this amazing lift. And I guess there's so much going on right now, again, like you said, that we don't have time to talk to. But in addition to our scholarship programs, we've actually got some tools on the website right now for helping people at home with young kids, teach them about architecture in fun ways that relate to the Octagon. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And it's really interesting how different those audiences are. So follow us on social media. Look for us online. And thank you, Mickey, for letting me share my passion for architecture and its potential to create a better world with your listeners.
Yeah, and I thank you, Marcy. I just wanted to underline that. I think architecture is often overlooked as a means of our human interaction with the environment, and it's, I think, critically important. So thank you, Marcy, for taking the time to do this episode with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mickey. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
And to our listeners, thank you as always for joining us for the Nonprofit Snapcast. We value your comments and feedback via the website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. And if you have any questions about the consulting work that we do, please visit nonprofitsnapshot.org. That's nonprofitsnapshot, not to be confused with Nonprofit Snapcast. nonprofitsnapshot.org. Click on the consulting tab at the top of the screen and you'll see the list of things that we're currently doing in partnerships with consultants across the country. In the meantime, thanks again for joining us. We'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.